The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Stephen Scott with you once again, and this is the show that's all about you. If you're blind or partially sighted, this is your forum to talk about those issues that really matter to you. Coming up this week, we're talking more about shared spaces once again, as more blind and partially sighted people are sharing their thoughts on the road schemes that are popping up around the country. Lots of you have so much to say on this, so we'll be tackling that issue head on once again. Also, as the new £10 note is launched in the UK, we find out how RNIB has been working with the Bank of England to make the new note more accessible. We'll also report on the charity Henshaws, who are celebrating their 180th birthday. And we find out how two plays based on disability issues were received at the recent Edinburgh Festival. That's all coming up on this week's Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, last week on the programme, we talked about Shared Spaces, the scheme that intends to bring cars and pedestrians into the same space. Now, the idea is that using visual cues, drivers and pedestrians alike are able to be more aware of each other. Well, for blind and partially sighted people like us, the result of such a scheme has been, well, full of concern and worry for the most part. Joy Croft told RNIB that she felt like she had been made to feel unwelcome in her hometown of Norwich.
My name's Joy Croft, and I've had two goes at living in Norwich because I knew that Norwich was a city that I, as a very independent, visually impaired person, would be able to live independently in. And you know, I was right for, well, gosh, until about the last year and a half, I was absolutely right. There's hardly anywhere I couldn't get, mostly on foot, in this very accessible city. But now it's all changed. But you know, I had quite a shocking experience. I went off to Marks and Spencer's to buy a birthday cake. And it was coming back that I discovered for the first time that those crossings were gone. I got up my white cymbal cane. I watched very carefully what everyone else was doing. Took my heart in my mouth and went across from Marks and Spencer's to Debenhams and came within, I don't know, about 8 or 10 inches of being hit by a bus whizzing around the corner, in spite of all the care I took. And that's the first and last time I've dared cross at what used to be the safest crossing in the city for me. I came back to Norwich because it felt like my city. And now, well, quite honestly, I don't feel as though I belong here. It's a city that's been designed or redesigned for other people. And I'm not wanted here. That's the way it feels. And it's frightening.
Now, that's a video you can watch more of online at rnib.org.uk. And please tell us your thoughts on Joy's story, but also your own views on shared spaces as well. Later in the programme, we'll be talking to three more blind people with very strong views like Joy on the various shared space schemes popping up around the country. Now, RNIB have been working with the Bank of England to make banknotes more accessible, in particular the brand new £10 note. Simon Pauly reports.
Now, the sight loss charity RNIB has been helping out with the Bank of England lately. Now, what have they been doing? Joining me now to tell us more is Victoria Cleland from Bank of England. Hello, Victoria.
Hello.
So we're talking about an accessible banknote, aren't we?
Absolutely. So the new £10 note featuring Jane Austen also has a new tactile feature on it.
So tell us a little bit before we do that. Explain to us, how important is accessibility to the Bank of England?
It's phenomenally important, both in terms of accessibility for our own staff, for people visiting the bank, but also for the public of the UK. The bank is the central bank of the United Kingdom, so I think it's important that people who are sort of understanding what the bank's doing, and particularly everyone using our banknotes, are able to do that.
And also, for blind and partially sighted people, I've heard that a few times where people think they've been told they've been given a certain note back, but it turns out they haven't, so I suppose it offers more security as well.
So we're keen to make sure that people are able to differentiate between the different denominations, the values of the notes. And the Bank of England notes, at the moment, they're tiered anyway, so the higher the denomination of the note, the larger it'll be, both in terms of height and width. We also have sort of very different colours across the notes and try and use bold numerals to show what the value is to that, to help some of the partially sighted people, and also the changes in size can be helpful. But what we've got now is a new innovation, a tactile feature where you can actually feel a series of raised dots that will give increased confidence about the value of the note.
So what actually brought about this partnership between RNIB and the Bank of England?
So we've been working closely with the RNIB for many years when we're introducing new banknote design, sort of showing them what the design looks like. They gave some really helpful advice a number of years ago in terms of, if you can put the note on a larger white space, that will help partially sighted people. Working with them, we were determined that we were going to keep the sort of the tiering, the different sizes of notes by denomination. And then a couple of years ago, we'd been working with them ahead of the introduction to polymer, doing some tests in terms of, would RNIB members like polymer, would it cause them any issues? We got some positive feedback there. We then thought, well, can we go a bit further and ran some focus groups with the RNIB to understand whether or not people would make use of a tactile feature. If they did use a tactile feature, what type of feature would be best for them?
Am I right in saying that the new note has improved security features on it?
Absolutely spot on, yes. So one of the reasons we've moved to polymer notes is because they can be combined with enhanced security features and make them much more difficult to counterfeit. So with polymer, it's more difficult to apply security features. We leave some large clear spaces that we call windows, and we can put security features on those. So there are lots of cunning things that are embedded in the notes that machines read, and there's some sort of very obvious security features that most of the public can see, but to help the blind, partially sighted, we're introducing the special tactile feature as well.
What's happening then for the future then? Have you got any more plans to make money more accessible?
We've got lots of plans here at the Bank of England. So the new £10 note featuring Jane Austen will be issued on the 14th of September this year. And then we're working hard on the next £20 note, which will be on polymer, and that will also include a tactile feature, and that will be introduced in 2020. In addition to that, we produce a lot of education materials to help people understand the different security features in the notes, and we have a large print version of that as well. So we're trying to think of other ways to help.
And would you like to get feedback from people that are, you know, from the blind and partially sighted community that are using the notes?
It's always helpful to have feedback. The feedback we had from the RNIB before we decided to move to polymer was incredibly helpful. We had a major public consultation to get the public's views, where sort of 87% were in favour, and we'd also got sort of positive feedback from the RNIB. As I say, we used RNIB focus groups to help us sort of develop this tactile feature. So we can't do everything everybody wants, but we're certainly sort of keen to get feedback and see how we can help.
And it's, I think to most of us in the public, we are not aware of what a mammoth task this is. What's been some of the biggest challenges of achieving this in the accessible notes?
So in terms of the accessible notes, there are a number of things to think about. The first one is having a feature that actually works for people, so something that they can recognise. So talking to the RNIB, it soon became clear that actually trying to have something in Braille on the note was unlikely to work, because it's only a small proportion of people who'd use Braille. So it's something that is easily recognisable. It's something that is relatively easy to produce. So banknotes are incredibly difficult to produce. They're sort of a mix of art and science. So we need to get that right. We need to think about the cost to the public purse. Also, it's defining a feature that will actually last. They go through a sort of a lot of pain in people's wallets and things, so there's no point having a feature that will only work for one or two uses. And we also need to think about the impact on the sort of all the ATMs and the cash accepting machines and how they will react to a particular note. So on the £10 note, we introduced a series of raised bumps, but we needed to get the balance right. They need to be sort of large enough for people to feel, but not so large that they'll jam the machines. So it's been quite a technical endeavour.
Well, it's very much appreciated by people who use these things. I think any move towards more accessibility is a good thing, and a partnership between RNIB and yourselves has borne fruit. Victoria Cleland from Bank of England, thank you very much for making the time to chat to me.
That's a pleasure.
Thanks to Simon Polly there, speaking to Victoria Cleland from the Bank of England. And there's lots more on that available at rnib.org.uk. Find out about the partnership between RNIB and the Bank of England and how all of this came about. Incredible story and great result as well for everyone involved. Now, coming up, we celebrate another charity celebrating 180 years of existence. Find out about Henshaw's and its early days as an asylum for the blind. That's next.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families, and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change, and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect. The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
Henshaw's is one of the oldest charities in the UK and this year are celebrating their 180th anniversary. They're holding a special exhibition in Manchester to tell the story of the charity over what has been almost 200 years. Henshaw's is a northern charity supporting people living with sight loss and a range of other disabilities. Now approaching almost 200 years old, the charity has decided to reflect on its history with an exhibition space at Manchester's Central Library. Nick Murren is the charity's chief executive.
It highlights our history of the last 180 years and gives the opportunity for the people of Manchester to come in and learn more about us.
The charity's history began back in 1810 when Oldham businessman Thomas Henshaw left £20,000 in his will to establish an asylum for the indigent blind in Manchester. In 1837, the original blind asylum finally opened its doors in Old Trafford. By 1930, the school had 273 pupils, 194 workshop employees, 64 residents and 19 blind instructors. The exhibition highlights all of this history through visual art and stories from people during the time. For those who can't attend, Henshaw's have also made the exhibition experience available online. Here's a sample.
After World War I, it was estimated that the total working age disabled population in the UK had doubled. As blinded soldiers returned home, there was a nationwide focus on training and employment for the blind, and more workshops were being built across the UK. Ben Pearce, a Henshaw's educated pupil, campaigned for blind rights his whole life. Pearce was involved in the establishment of the National League of the Blind, NLB, and was the league's first general secretary. The establishment of the NLB led to the Blind March of 1920, which saw 60 blind men converge in Stevenson Square, Manchester, to launch their protest for government welfare provision. They marched across the UK, holding rallies in each town. After 20 days, around 250 blind men arrived at Trafalgar Square with 10,000 trade unionists. The Blind Act of 1920 took into account some of the NLB's aims, including the compulsory registration of all blind and the lowering of pension age for blind people to 50. Pearce was amongst those who met the then Prime Minister, David Lloyd George, and was founder of the journal The Advocate. He later became Vice President of Henshaw's and received an OBE in 1944 for his services to the blind.
Henshaw's is still growing today, employing over 300 members of staff and 232 volunteers who support individuals, families and their carers who are living with sight loss as well as a range of other disabilities. RNIB community facilitator Daniel Colcombe has been speaking to some of today's service users.
My name is Andrew Rose. I am a member of Henshaw's. I am a service user from when I lost my sight about 7 years ago, and I've started working with Henshaws, doing public speaking, became a member of the board about 4 years ago, and now I'm very proud to say that I'm the vice chairman of Henshaws.
Oh, so we're in the presence of the vice chairman.
Yes.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Marion Alma Burrows, and I'm an ambassador for Henshaws. I joined them when I was losing my sight 5-6 years ago now, and I was very proud to become an ambassador for all the kindness that I've had from them and all the groups that I go and attend, which was lots of fun and laughter. Nobody's miserable. We're all happy and we all love each other.
Now, in terms of Henshaws itself is a local blind society for those who aren't au fait with what Henshaws do. Can you both just maybe give me a bit more insight into how Henshaws has been of particular help to you? And maybe how it could help individuals out there who are listening to this.
Certainly. Well, I know my history now, so we've been going since about 1837. It's our 180th year, and we've always been a progressive charity. And just in the last 7 or 8 years, the technology for the blind and visually impaired has changed remarkably. So I can get around. I'm able to use my phone without sight. I can use a computer without sight. Previously, I ran big business, and I wouldn't be able to operate the way I do now without these changes in technology. In all honesty, I'd be, you can quote this, I'd be sat at home going, blah, 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 blah. But I was able to apply my business and finance background with the help of the technology available these days to help Henshaws and bring it into the 21st century. And very much so, because for me, with the advantages of the mobile phone and the accessibility options and computers and, say, speech software, whether it's JAWS, Zoom Text, there is no reason now why somebody with a visual impairment who's gone blind can't actively contribute to society in a meaningful way. Just to give you an idea of some of the stuff I've been against. I lost my sight, as I say, 6 or 7 years ago. And when somebody, an ignorant person heard about that, she shouted to me, "Why don't you get yourself a job as a piano tuner?"
And that was only 7 years ago?
That was even more recent than that. Wow. And I said, by the way, do you realise I'm on the board of one of the biggest charities for the blind in the UK? But they just thought because I'd lost my sight, I was therefore useless.
So that's an example of how attitudes haven't particularly changed in the 180 years of Henshaw's history. Would you say that anything else has? I mean, we talk about technology's progressed quite
significantly. Oh, no, very much. I would say the issue is with people of who are less technology-minded. All the kids know that blind people can get around with a, you know, GPS system on the phone. You know, they see the white cane and they think, yeah, all right, you can't see, but you can still get around. The issue we've got is, I'm going to apologise for this in advance, but it is the people of the ages of around 50, 60, 70 who don't grasp that the technology is available.
Yeah, who maybe haven't been brought up with that kind of technology.
Exactly, so. Which, is understandable because they've not been brought up on it, but the ignorance, unfortunately, is still there. It's not with the youth of today. Yeah. They know exactly what's going on.
And Marion, you talked in your lovely speech, the opening speech today, about what Henshaws means to you and how much it supported you.
Yes, it's the friendship. That means a lot to me, because when you're on your own and you could sit at home and feel sorry for yourself, I'm not that kind of a person. I've got to be out there and speak to people because I love people.
And you mentioned attending a lot of groups at Henshaws.
Yes.
What are those?
They're a social group. We have birthday parties, we go out for meals, we have entertainment every week. And he has volunteers that look after us and make sure we're all right and pick us up and take us home.
So without Henshaws, where would you be now?
Well, I'd be sat at home doing the same. the same without them.
Do you know, I do you mind me butting in here? Yeah. But it was I was very, if there's ever a fortunate age to lose your sight, it was about 7 or 8 years ago with the advancements in technology, and Henshaw's embraced them. When I lost my sight and I tried to get help from the usual suspects or what have you, just to give you an example, I left the UK, head of finance of a £20 million business. I lost my sight while I was away travelling, came back, and they said, right, Mr. Rose, we're going to direct to the DWP, that's what you're going to do. So they put me straight on a back-to-work course. The first thing they did to me was say, right, we've got this A4 piece of paper, numeracy and literacy test, you've got to do it on your own. And I was like, I can't even see that.
How was that the solution?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was, this is why I am so, well, my love of Henshaw's and sorting out people with blind and visual impairment, because there is so much ignorance around, you know, that's a perfect example. If the DWP don't even know how to deal with somebody who's just lost their sight, what the hell chance do they have? And this is why, as I say, going back to it, fortunate with the time I lost my sight, I put the hours in, the time to learn how to use my phone without sight, my computer, blah, blah, blah. And this is what we need to get across to everybody. You know, what I have learned over the last 6 or 7 years, we are busy trying to get it onto the internet so anybody around the world can learn what I have done over the last 6 or 7 years. You know, me talking as somebody of working age, you know, there's obviously differences for somebody who's born without sight, somebody who loses their sight in middle age like myself, or somebody who loses their sight in the retirement age. It's working out the right formula to help them out.
And what I've quickly learned is Henshaw support people of all ages.
Oh, very much
from
so.
Children. Yes. And that was one of the interesting facts that I learned today.
Cradle to grave.
Yes.
One thing, if there's something I can give you to take away, when I got diagnosed that I was going to lose my sight, this was back in 1996, and this is why I do a lot of lectures at Manchester Royal Eye Hospital to the students or what have you. I didn't know when I was going to lose my sight, but I wish one of the consultants had said there, whatever you do, Mr. Rose, will you go and learn to touch type? And it'll make your world a whole lot different. And that is what has opened my world up to be able to do what I do now.
Is there anything you'd like to leave us with? Any final thoughts about Henshaw's or...?
Join them. You'll have a wonderful time.
So if anyone's feeling,
feeling lonely,
apprehensive out there about maybe worrying about meeting new people, what would you say to them?
Don't worry, because we're all friendly and we'll make you very, very welcome.
Oh, great.
Please. I'm Malcolm. I'm a service user of Henshaw's.
And we're here today to celebrate 180 years of Henshaw's.
Indeed, yes.
What are your thoughts about the exhibition?
I think it's long needed, and I think it'll raise Henshaw's profile within the local area. The catchment that Henshaw's is hitting with, when you look at the amount of visually impaired people, is quite small. So I think by raising the profile of Henshaw's with the exhibition, I think it'll mean a lot more people get helped when they need it.
And how has Henshaw's supported you in the past?
I've been registered now, severely sighted, for about 5 years. I've done SkillStep, which is a course to learn, potentially getting back into work. And then subsequent to that, I've done a lot of volunteering and working with them on other projects.
So it sounds like you're quite involved in various bits and bobs.
Just a bit, yes.
Yeah. What does it mean for the people of Manchester to have a blind society like Henshaw's?
I think it's very good because it allows the organisation to develop a local strategy, whereas organisations like the RNIB deal with the more national strategy and deal with the bigger problems.
So you're here on a much local level, more... Yeah.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's thinking about coming to the exhibition or visiting Henshaw's, what would you say to those people?
Please do. You won't be disappointed.
And what can people expect when they first contact Henshaw's?
They can expect a well-trained team that will give the appropriate assessment for the person's needs and then help that person with what they need.
Finally, have you discovered anything interesting that you didn't know about Henshaw's or the history of visual impairment in Manchester?
I can think of off the top of my head.
I'm interested to know that we actually used to call it an asylum.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
That was my fun fact of the day.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
The exhibition to celebrate Henshaw's anniversary is being held throughout September and October. You'll discover how the communities of Greater Manchester have worked alongside the charity to improve the lives of people with sight loss. You can even see a number of famous Manchester images through the eyes of someone with a common visual impairment. Danielle Colcombe spoke to those involved in setting up the exhibition.
Hi, I'm Stuart and I'm Legacies Manager at Henshaw's.
I'm Lena and I'm the archivist that was working on the exhibition.
And we're here to celebrate 108 years of Henshaw's. How has it been putting the exhibition together?
Absolutely fascinating. I suppose there's so many stories we could have told, and it's just been wonderful to see stories of people that we should know about. You know, people that changed the world for sight loss in Manchester, or people that marched to demand rights for people that were visual impairments in the 1920s that nobody knows about. And so uncovering those stories has been great.
And Nina, working on the project, have you discovered any interesting facts that you maybe didn't already know?
I found it really fascinating. I didn't know that Manchester was a city until 1853. And also just learning about the lives of what it was like to be blind in the past, before the welfare state, before other things were provided and there was other help. That's what I found most interesting, because no one really knows that there were jobs, what kind of jobs they did and stuff.
And why has it been important to uncover this information?
I think it's important because I think it's good to remind people that actually cities have been accessible for a very long time. People have been caring about their neighbours for a very long time. And for us, it was a chance to say thank you to the people of Greater Manchester who have donated and volunteered and fundraised and enabled people to live the life they want to live. But also because actually we don't tell the history of disability. We don't tell the history of the people who lived through, worked in factories. The women that stayed in Manchester and weren't evacuated and knitted scarves for the soldiers who were blind. We don't tell those stories, and I think we need to tell more of those stories.
Yeah, so we are writing history as we speak, really. So maybe in another 180 years, we'll be celebrating the more work of Henshaw's.
Yeah, and it will be completely different because people with sight loss will be living in the community in a completely different way, or in the way they want to live. And I think that's the thing that fascinates me and excites me of how far we have come.
Nina, what can people expect when they come to the exhibition?
I think that they can expect to see what Henshaw's does, but also the stories of the people that Henshaw's has been involved with, and the story of the blind people and in Greater Manchester.
And if anyone's interested in getting in touch with Henshaw's or coming down to the exhibition, where's it held and how can they do that?
The exhibition's held at Manchester Central Library, which is open 9 till 8, Monday to Thursday, 9 till 5, Monday, Friday and Saturday, and it's there. So you can just come and see it. But if you want any more information about Henshaw's history or about the exhibition, give us a call on 0161 786 3656 or visit the website.
And that number again is 0161 786 3656. That's 0161 786 3656. And the website for Henshaw's is www.henshaws.org. Now, let's have a look at what's happening this week at RNIB. This week at RNIB, we begin with the news that the new £10 note from the Bank of England has been partly designed with the help of RNIB. Cathy Rundle is the User Experience Manager for the charity and described the changes which will make this note easier for blind and partially sighted people to identify.
The new £10 note has tactile markings on, which is new and hasn't been done on UK notes before. It's still got the size and the height and width distinction between the different notes, and it's still got good colour contrast and the large denomination. But what makes this one stand out is the tactile markings, which can be used by somebody with no sight to identify the note.
And she hopes it's a partnership with the bank that will continue to bring benefits.
I hope they'll continue to liaise with us, and I think they will about the new notes. We did the testing on the tactile markings on the range of notes, so going up to the £50. You know, that testing included the set of notes. I'm hoping very much that the tactile markings will just go on all the notes as they bring out the higher denomination.
Now, today marks the start of National Eye Health Week throughout the UK. The RNIB and Specsavers are teaming up for a number of events to try and get people to take better care of their sight and protect it in the long term. The pair recently teamed up for a report called State of the Nation Eye Health 2017. RNIB Acting Chief Executive Sally Harvey says people need to understand how to look after their eyes, as we're all living longer.
Well, one of the reasons there is the ageing population. So certainly women who tend to live longer are at greater risk than the men, with one in four women actually set to develop sight loss in their lifetime compared to one in eight men. So overall, kind of, you know, one in five people losing their sight in their lifetime really does emphasise why eye health checks are necessary, with that 50% being avoidable.
Dr. Nigel Best from Specsavers says it needs to be made clear that an eye test doesn't just focus on visual health alone.
As part of a sight test, an optician will examine the back of your eyes. They'll be looking and examining your blood vessels. They can see signs of high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol. Just recently, a colleague of mine was examining a 12-year-old boy and identified some changes on the retina, which turned out to be leukemia. And you know, for all intents and purposes, that was a very healthy child who's now receiving treatment. So yes, eye tests do go well beyond just checking for eye conditions.
National Eye Health Week continues all this week, and Sally Harvey says the recent State of the Nation Eye Health 2017 report needs to be taken on board by all those with a vested interest.
So as we launch the report, we'll be talking to politicians, we'll be talking to the wider sector, the health services, the local authorities, to emphasise the importance of eye checks to ensure that, one, avoidable sight loss can be prevented, and of course that where people do lose their sight, they are able to access the right support and services to support them.
Now, throughout September, to mark National Eye Health Week, RNIB and Specsavers are taking to some of the UK's busiest high streets to encourage shoppers to look after their eyes by having regular sight tests. RNIB and Specsavers are visiting 11 cities with the iPod, a mobile sight simulator that allows shoppers to experience what it's like to have four of the most common causes of sight loss in the UK. That's glaucoma, cataracts, diabetic eye disease, and age-related macular degeneration. Lynn Morgan sent us this report following the iPod's visit to Cardiff.
Real eye-opener. Quite shocked, really.
It was very, very informative.
It's good to go to get your eyes checked before it gets too serious.
You should get tested all the time.
Just some of the comments made as people left the iPod in Cardiff. Adam Winnell is head of optical services for Specsavers, and he talked me through the iPod.
So it's a simulator. The idea being is we've got two cameras mounted on the top of this dome, which people can manoeuvre. And as part of the simulation, we've got four different eye conditions that the camera simulates. So we've got macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts and diabetic retinopathy, which all affect your eyes in slightly different ways. And the idea being is that the camera screen highlights the way in which you lose your vision. So, for example, if you've got macular degeneration, you lose your central vision first. Whereas with glaucoma, it starts off in the peripheral part. You lose your edge vision first, which then brings in towards the centre. In cataracts, everything gets more fuzzy and blurry and foggy. And with diabetic retinopathy, you can lose patches of vision. So it's really raising the awareness of these eye conditions, first of all, but also trying to say to people, look, these are avoidable conditions. If they've been caught early, they're treatable, so therefore there's no need to lose vision in the first place, but really you've got to have an eye test in order to pick them out.
And is that why those four have been selected? Because they are preventable?
Well, they're the most common. Okay, generally speaking, the most common forms of eye diseases in the UK, particularly cataracts, is one that many people will be familiar with. But yeah, they're the most common.
Now, you're in a busy high street in Cardiff, so what's been the general reaction when people have seen what happens to your vision with these eye conditions?
People are just interested in finding out more. Most people, if they've obviously not got any eye problems themselves, they either have family members or friends with one of those eye conditions. So it's interesting for them to understand maybe what could happen to the vision if they got them, but also understanding a bit more about how important it is to have a regular eye test as a tool to spot these things if they are there.
Your general message would be?
Have a regular eye test, because it's very simple. Even an eye test fee, £20 to £40 is typical, but what's that in relation to your eyesight at the end of the day? And most people, every 2 years is fine. We advise some people need more regular eye examinations because they've got risk factors for certain conditions. But generally speaking, it's get in there, have an eye test to look after your eyes. It's not all about specs. You know, at least half the test is all about checking certain aspects of your eye health, and then the other section is looking at whether you need glasses. But then that's all about making your vision as good as it can be as well.
I knew some of the stuff already, but it was good to have the optician's perspective on it. My husband has had cataracts, so yeah.
So you will be going to the optician then?
Oh yes, 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 I do regularly.
I just thought it would just be loss of sight and that would be it. Like, I didn't realise the effects it gives with different illnesses and like diabetes. I didn't know you could lose your sight with diabetes and stuff, so I'm quite shocked. Yeah, it's an eye-opener. I'm going to Specsavers right now, I'm booking an eye test.
Do you get your eyes tested?
No, I've never.
Never?
Never.
So what are you going to do now then? Are you going to go for it?
I don't know, I see fine with my eyes. The doctor told me to get my eyes tested because I keep having migraines.
Are you going to go now?
Probably, yeah.
Well, it was kind of interesting to see how it actually looks for the person suffering from the different conditions. And also, you don't really see it to start with. So, yeah, I'm going to book in next week.
Reaction from the people of Cardiff after visiting the iPod. And before that, you heard Head of Enhanced Optical Services for Specsavers, Adam Monell. For further information on the RNIB and Specsavers iPod tour, go to rnib.org.uk/iPod tour.
Lynn Morgan reporting for RNIB Connect there. And for more news from the UK's leading sight loss charity, visit rnib.org.uk. That's this week at RNIB.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, what's it like to perform at one of the biggest festivals in the world? Nikki Kelly spoke to Tom Skelton and Georgie Morell to find out about their one-man, one-woman shows.
I'm Nikki for R&B Connect at Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and we are talking about how accessible it is, and I'm here with two amazing visually impaired comedians, the wonderful Georgie Morell.
Hello.
And the wonderful Tom Skelton, or Skeleton.
Oh, well, I mean, it is Skelton. Come on, Nikki. It's a joke in my show about, well, you know.
Eye banter, innit?
Yeah.
It's one thing we like.
So, both your shows are great. It was really great to come and see you both, and you're really representative for the VR community. So, thank you very, very much for that.
Thank you.
So, why did you think it was important to talk about your visual impairment in your shows?
Well, I've done comedy for a few years now, and this is my third solo show, and I felt, well, I suppose it's a couple of reasons. I think I feel the most comfortable I've been with it, like being a performer who has a visual impairment rather than being a visually impaired performer. And so I felt then I was comfortable enough with the concept of doing a show with it that I could this time. And also I needed a theme for the show, but also I think when you have something that is very personal to you and unique like that, it's a really rich scene to explore.
Yeah, there's a story to be told that is pretty unique. However, I didn't realise it until, because I trained as an actor and then moved into comedy and storytelling, and it was only just chatting with a mate when I said I want to do a comedy show, and he heard about my visual impairment and that particular year that I was blind. He was like, that's it, that's your thing. And then it all fell into place from there. It's important to me because I still think it is an underrepresented disability. It's in a lot of ways an invisible disability. We don't know a lot about it. And as well, if you're going to... There's still a lot of misconceptions about sight loss, the variations of blind and being partially sighted. If you're not going to talk about it, as someone who is, then how are we going to get past these and knock down those barriers and get more of an even playing field? People see the negative connotations of having a disability when actually I don't. Me and Tom are good examples of using the positive in that we've made them into shows, charge people to come and see them, and it is thus our commodity. We have careers as a result. But no, there's other aspects to it as well, and more personal ones that I feel very, very lucky. So don't see the disability, see the person, for God's sake.
And I like the idea of inviting people into laugh at things that happen due to a disability. You're not laughing at the disability, you're laughing at this, my reading of my disability like this, or how certain people view it, or things that can happen because you're blind. Because there are many things, I'm sure any like person with any sort of partial sight or vision impairment has experienced. There are lots of funny things that either that happen to you, or that people, you know, react to you happening. Like, you know, sometimes with my level of sight, sometimes I just start laughing when I have been looking all around my room and just find that it's genuinely just there. It's literally just there, and I just didn't look there, but it's right in front of me.
Mm.
And I think asking people to laugh at something makes it much more approachable as a
concept. Makes it accessible.
Yeah.
It's easier to laugh than to cry. There's no need to cry about these things. We don't. I use it to my advantage sometimes. I'm not going to lie, definitely use it.
Tom, this one is for you. So you involved quite a lot of audience members in your show. And did you find that difficult because of your visual impairment? And did you struggle with that at all?
Or? Well, actually, one of the other reasons why I was so interested or wanted to do this show about blindness or my own blindness is that I can suddenly... all the things I do on stage just suddenly make sense to the audience. So the last two shows, I would knock over props or not be able to find a costume. And the audience would be like, that's a bit of a weird... it's quite funny, but it's quite a weird thing that he's doing. So I never mentioned it because I didn't want to be them to... it didn't feel important to the show. It just felt like I was a... you know, as much as I'm blonde or got a silly face, that's, you know, it's one aspect of me. So I found it liberating. I can go up and I can't tell if I'm not looking at someone properly, then they know why. If I can't quite find someone, they know why. If I'm doing some, you know, if they need to help me, they know why. I found it a lot more comforting having that blanket of blindness saying, you know, because I'm meant to, sometimes twice actually, weirdly, I've got up a teenage boy to be my consort as a king of Hungary, and you know it's not great, is it? But they've just happened to be quite tall for their age, and they'll forgive it rather than, because if I hadn't suggested that I was partially sighted, they didn't know, the audience would think, why is that guy getting up a young kid to play his potential lover?
I think it's a secret.
Whereas now they all know, and they're laughing along because it's my bad eyesight that's made me choose it, rather than him being weird and creepy.
It comes back round as well to what you said about why we do it. It's that it is as much of who we are as, yeah, being blonde. I like to read crime thrillers. You know, it's a part of your character. It's a part of your makeup. It's not the whole of you. It's just another bit of you, and you just work your life differently.
So, what is next for you two after Edinburgh? What is Georgie and what is Tom doing?
Tom, what are you doing?
I'm going back to London, going back to work, working for the RSPC, our sister, your younger sister, charity, and then doing more comedy, trying to bring this show to other places as well, and seeing my gran.
Aww,
a couple of times. Both of them, a couple of times. I promise you, gran. If you're listening to this, it's already happened. I don't know.
I'll go see my mum and dad and my brother and the dogs. I've got a Radio 4 drama coming out that I'm in. That's on BBC Radio 4. That comes out in, I want to say, November. I think we're still waiting for dates to be confirmed. Some more stuff for the RNIB, which I thoroughly look forward to. And then both shows go to the Theatre Royal in Nottingham in the spring.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Nikki Kelly there and what appeared to be a very rowdy Edinburgh Festival, and quite right as well. Right, let's catch up with what is going on around the UK in our events guide. On Saturday the 7th of October from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m, RNIB College Loughborough is holding a family open day. Now you can go along for a day of fun activities and hear about further education provision, supported internship programmes, independence programmes and daytime activities. Now, if you want to find out more and book a place, then the number is 01509 611 077. That's 01509 611 077. Or visit rnibcollege.ac.uk. That's rnibcollege.ac.uk. A vision-impaired archery session will be held on Sunday the 8th of October from 12 noon till 2 p.m. at Southfields College at the Ice Aspire Centre in Wandsworth. And then on the second Sunday of the month, three professional instructors will give one-to-one coaching and all equipment is provided. If you would like to attend, please contact the archery coordinator, that's Fred Carpenter, on this number 07743 942 0772. That's 07743 942 062. The National Museum of Cardiff are holding an audio-described tour on Thursday the 12th of October to explore the museum's Victorian Art Gallery, including masterpieces by Turner. A limited amount of guided assistance from museum staff is available. Entry is free, but booking is essential. Call this number 029 2057 3240 for further details. I'll give you that number again, 029 2057 3240 for more details. The Science Museum in London are holding a Viscovery Day, as opposed to Discovery, on Saturday 14th of October. VI Days include a series of events which are specifically designed for families with members who are visually impaired, partially sighted or blind. Themed around Illuminating India, the exhibition celebrates India's contribution to science, technology and maths. Events will include immersive storytelling and workshops. Suitable for children aged 5 and over, events are free but must be booked. For further information, email familyprograms@sciencemuseum.ac.uk. That email address, familyprograms@sciencemuseum.ac.uk, or call on 0207 942 4086. That's 0207 942 4086. And if you would like your event added to the guide, email us at theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, you might have heard on last week's The Weekly Connect our discussion on shared spaces. Lots of you have been in touch since then, and three of those listeners join us now on the line. Ken Reid, Gemma Brown and Sarah Bryan, thank you so much for coming on to the programme. Ken, if I can start with you, what is your view of shared spaces schemes?
So far, I haven't come across that many formal shared spaces, thankfully. But I've been aware of the idea of them for 7 or 8 years, I'd say. And at that, when I first heard about them, I thought, this is silly. And then I heard one or two more stories, and I thought, no, this isn't silly. This is very, very silly. And I've looked into it and researched a little bit and read about it over the different places. Even the guy who first had the idea thinks it's actually quite a silly idea now, and wouldn't advocate it in any sense. And the planners who seem to have got hold of the whole idea of it, I'm not quite sure what they think the big benefit is. Because they're not implementing it in the way that was ever intended to be implemented when it was thought maybe it wasn't such a bad idea. So it was meant to be used, what they originally called them was home zones. It was meant to be used around residential areas. And all the major implementations have been city centre, town centre type environments, where the weight of traffic is huge. And so the idea of trying to mix pedestrians of any sort with moving vehicles in a busy environment is just doesn't bear thinking about it really, although sadly we have to think about it because it seems to keep happening. More and more areas are putting them in and thinking it's, in some ways, I don't know, I think the idea is that it slows the traffic down, but it doesn't slow it down to the point where it's not going to hurt or cause serious damage. So, I'm clearly not at all convinced.
Okay. Gemma, from your point of view, I mean, you've had experience of this as well. Tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, so in Southampton, they have been quite a kind of popular thing in the times of the council kind of bringing them out and not really telling people beforehand what they're going to do, and then they just appear. I've had a couple of near misses with my guide dog. One of them was, you know, the screeching brakes type thing. Oh dear, I'm in the road. I didn't think I was in the road. That's not what I said.
What's to that effect, was it?
Yeah.
Your guide dog didn't know where to take you.
So basically my guide dog, this is even worse, but they had implemented a shared street. I didn't know they'd implemented a shared street. And then they had missed off the tactile paving to denote that you were about to hit a junction. Now, so that meant for my guide dog, there was absolutely nothing to tell her to stop. There was no indication that, you know, she thought we were on the pavement. So did I. It was only that you know, I heard this car screeching towards me, doing a bit of an emergency stop jobby, and then kind of realised, oh, there's no buildings. I've stepped out into the road here. And on talking to the council, that was actually a mistake. They meant to put in the tactile paving there, but there was still no curb or nothing else to indicate. And we're talking sort of one square of tactile paving.
What did you think was tactile? So when you see one square, what kind of tactile?
The bobbly ones.
Uh-huh. Right.
So the bobbly, like you would get for a pedestrian crossing.
Yeah. The ones that mark the edge of the road. You know,
yeah, and so they literally put in one slab. So
that's good of them.
Yeah, guide dogs actually came out after that incident. It was an area I was using a lot at the time. And it took the council ages to put in that one single piece of tactile. So I had to, we had to know that we were going to stop, even if the tactile wasn't there. So we had to use essentially a post. So I had to get my guide dog to take me up to the post, stand there, hold onto the post, take 2 steps forwards, and then I knew I was at where the curb would be. So that was an interesting experience.
So they weren't going to put tactile along the whole length of this shared space. They were just putting a tactile at the point where they thought you ought to be crossing. Is that right?
No. So it would be, you're walking, it basically was a crossroad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Okay.
So you would be walking along and then there would be, as well as shared street kind of on your left shoulder, there would be... you would be walking along and then there would be car traffic coming in front of you to go through the crossroads.
Uh-huh.
So that was the main danger for me, was not stopping for that crossroad.
Okay. Yeah. Let's bring Sarah in on this. Sarah Bryan, who's also got some views on shared spaces. What have you got to say on this?
Well, I've experienced them firsthand because I relocated with my husband last year from a city that didn't have any shared spaces and was really easy to get around up in Sheffield, and we've moved down to Exeter now, and the city centre is mostly shared space and it's a total nightmare. And you know, I've had some mobility input from guide dogs and stuff like that, but I actually don't feel that I'm able to have the same amount of independence and quality of life down here as I did up in Sheffield because of the shared spaces. I have to take enormous details. If I want to go to 2 shops opposite each other, I have to walk all the way back down up to the top of the high street to the one Pelican crossing there is to cross over or get a bit of assistance from the public. I can't even get off the bus at the nearest stop to the place I want to go because there's nowhere to safely cross. So I find I'm having to sort of walk miles to just stay safe. And the first time I got off the bus to practice a route with my guide dog, she took me straight out into the road because she couldn't. Obviously, like Gemma says, the dog doesn't know any different.
Mm-hmm.
There's no demarcations at all, and there's also a real lack of Pelican crossings full stop in Exeter until you get quite some way down the high street and onto one of the side streets. So, I'm finding it a nightmare down here, to be honest. And my dog's having to learn to locate posts and bollards. We're having to sort of teach her which bollards to find for when there's a turning because there's no other way for me to know. Or, for me to give her the next instructions. So a lot more of... Now she takes me up to every single post thinking she's going to get a treat. no alternative.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We had Joy Croft from Norwich who got in touch with RNIB to tell us that she felt that she was made to feel unwelcome in her own town centre because of shared spaces. Is that a feeling that resonates with all of you?
Yeah, absolutely. If I was feeling so intimidated that I couldn't find my way safely. I'm a cane user rather than a dog user, and I need the curbs to be able to know where I'm at the edge. And my hometown is quite busy. If they threaten to put
to take away the break between the road and the pavement. It's quite a narrow street, and it would be very easy to drift a little bit away from the building edge. And I guess one advantage being a cane user over a dog user is I can tap the building edges all the way along to know that I am still far enough away from the cars. But it would really intimidate me quite a lot, and it takes a lot to do that.
So off the back of that, I'm in a bit of a unique position because as well as being guide dog owner and having a guide dog, I'm also a cane user because I am a part-time electric wheelchair user because I have a physical disability as well.
Right.
And so this area in Southampton, I have basically stopped going there. I don't go there at all. Even if I need to go somewhere along there, I'll take a friend with me, I'll get a cab, I just won't go there because... with my cane, they have put in a kind of very, very gentle slope to denote that you're going too far over to the central area where the cars are going to be, but I really struggle to pick it up with a cane. And my cane skills are pretty good, but I really struggle to pick it up because it is so slight. There are a lot of promises made that they were going to add some texture to that to almost add a bit of a rumble strip so that it would be more tactile for cane users, but that has never happened. And the thing is, if I'm using, you know, my cane, my guide dog or my wheelchair, one of the issues in Southampton is in this particular area, they put street furniture all the way up to the area, which is designated the road. By like a visual change in colour, and so to get around the obstacles, you have to just step out. And it's interesting. I did a piece recently with Channel 5, and we did kind of lots of stuff in this area because me and my guide dog had just stopped going there. So we did loads of stuff in this area. My guide dog probably hasn't been there for a couple of years. And in every single test we did, she just stepped out straight into the road, which isn't her fault, you know, and it was kind of what we wanted to show. So, you know, I had people looking out for me, so it's fine. But even when we should have been doing like an off-curb obstacle because the pavement was totally blocked, she was just guiding me around straight into the road. At one point, I tripped over this little kind of dip, which is supposed to denote be kind of a tactile representation that I'm stepping into the road. I just tripped over it and nearly went flying. So it's just like, it's a total fail. And I think it is important to remember that, you know, these issues, like some things can be done that might be a little bit helpful to cane users or whatever. So if I was really searching for it and I thought I knew where it was, I might be able to find that, dip with a cane. But if I'm walking, I'm not going to find it until A, I either trip over it, or B, I'm just going to, I'm just going to miss the dip altogether and not even notice it.
I wish we had more time. I have to cut you off, but thank you guys so much. That's the Weekly Connect. We're back same time next week.